Welcome in to Husker Max today. I'm Caleb Henry. I'll be joined in just a couple of minutes by Nick Handley, who had a hell of a time the other night in Gabe Swanson's walk-off win. Gabe Swanson getting the walk-off, but Nebraska as a team getting the win over Kansas State the other night at Haymarket Park. I'll have a lot to ask him about that experience, all of the Greg Sharp connections that continue to come up around the Nebraska-Kansas State series, what you saw at Haymarket Park the other night with his daughters getting to throw out the first pitch, and all of that continuing to honor the late, great Greg Sharp. And then a year ago, when Kansas State was in Lincoln, you got the first edition of the Greg Sharp patches on the hats, and that's when Jackson Brockett threw a no-hitter. So there's just been a little bit of magic every time Nebraska and K-State have met up in Lincoln, and there's been a Greg Sharp connection. So that's been very intriguing to follow, very magical, very emotional for a lot of people to follow. Nebraska baseball, 3 weekends left in Big Ten conference play, as well as, you know, a non-con out there sitting with Creighton. That's a big one when you're looking at the RPI. So the Husker baseball is surging, and we're going to be able to check on where Husker baseball goes as we welcome in Nick Handley right now. But Nick, I was just saying, for Husker baseball the other day, let me first tease this. We're going to be talking about the Nebraska Athletic Department as a whole because of a conversation that I had the other day. The exact words were a bottom of the barrel Big Ten athletic department. We'll get into that a little bit later. So that's welcome to the first 20 seconds on the show, Nick Handley.
that's quite the that is quite the tease right there. My goodness. Okay, let's go. Happy Thursday, everybody.
We'll start with baseball. And as I was saying, all of the connections that you've had the last couple of times that we have gotten to see the if I can figure out the format and click the right button since my computer died the other day. The connections between the Nebraska and K-State series and the last two times that you have had the Wildcats in Lincoln, there's been a Greg Sharp connection. Last year with the patches going on for the first time and Jackson Brockett throwing out the no-hitter, and this time Greg's daughters coming out and getting to throw that first pitch and continuing to honor the memory of their late father and all the connections he had as a K-State alum and then coming in so many years here with Nebraska. Let's start with that aspect of it. For the other night, because it was a magical night in ways that it didn't seem like it was going to be entirely from start to finish. But seeing that first pitch get thrown out in the love that Husker Nation has for obviously Greg Sharp, but the Sharp family as a whole.
And this was something that it felt that it was going to be a special night regardless of the outcome, because we had a chance to, you start getting into the season. We remember how the season began. We remember how devastated this entire fan base was. But then you also think about the people that are still processing this every day. And that is Greg's wife, Amy. That's his daughters. That's the new son-in-law. That's the extended family. That's his brothers out in Kansas. And after everybody has really paid their respects, you know, you get back into your lives. And for that family, I think that's when this has been probably the most difficult, where you are maybe a little bit more alone with your thoughts. And not to say that the family's completely isolated and everything. I mean, there are so many memories and so many tributes that have, and I think should continue to happen about our friend Greg. But I thought it was very uplifting to see them still with that same upbeat presence that we had seen even going back to Greg's funeral, where I walked away from that. And I remember my wife and I just amazed the grace and the just the strength is probably the best way to describe it from Amy, from the girls, and from that family. And just an unimaginable tragedy on from the time that Greg was diagnosed with cancer to the time that we lost him. It wasn't a long time. We just, you know, we didn't have enough time with Greg. And I say that as a friend and as a colleague. And so I know that that's what that family thinks about every day. And there's always constant reminders of Greg. And so when you do have Nebraska and Kansas State, red and purple, going head to head in any sport, I mean, it could be the most arbitrary sport that we don't even talk about. It could be bowling. And I think you would immediately think of Nebraska, Kansas State. Well, I'm going to think of Greg Sharp immediately because those were his two passions when it came to sports. And, you know, when you combine the two schools, his alma mater and where he got started and really made a name for himself to the place that he absolutely flourished in Lincoln. And then you combine those two loves of his life with his ultimate love of his life. And that was his family. Being part of that game, which I tip the cap to Kansas State. They did this back towards the end of March when the two teams played over in Manhattan. It was such a great gesture. And there's that mutual respect that I think both schools have, especially for that subject, because I think we've all understood what he meant to both schools, what he meant to both athletic departments and to those broadcasts that have always been absolutely class act broadcasts. You sensed, Caleb, that there was obviously something bigger than baseball. And even going into the game itself, it was really odd. So the first four innings, everything K-State did in the top of the first, Nebraska did in the bottom of the first. What K-State uh-huh. did in the top of the second, Nebraska did in the bottom of the second. They were mere images of each other for the first four innings. And then we get a little bit of a breakaway there, but then Nebraska goes up, they put up three. Well, then Kansas State comes back in the following inning, and they put up three. And it was actually a very fun baseball game. The only inning that I look at, and it got really frustrating, was that top of the ninth, where all of a sudden you're thinking, oh my gosh, they get that extra run, and you know, here we go. But as soon as Dylan Carey gets on base in the bottom of the ninth, it just felt like there could be something brewing, and so, not just because.
Real quick before that, so where it was, Nebraska was up 4-2, gave up the three runs in the seventh, yeah. and then the one run in the top of the ninth. So Nebraska goes into the bottom of the ninth, last three outs of opportunity, down 6-4.
Right,
and then it goes from there.
Yeah, and I think there was a bit of a dejected feeling after the way that Kansas State got that extra run in the top of the ninth. It wasn't good baseball for Nebraska. And so you're thinking, no momentum. All right, you got to figure something out. And bottom line is you got to figure out a way to get that tying run to the plate. And Nebraska did that right out of the gate. So you look at how that inning plays out, and all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, we got two guys on. All right, now we got three guys on. Okay, now we're in a situation where you do have a guy coming to the bat that has had an up and down season, but Bennett mentioned, you know, we're looking through the numbers, and Jared Meister keeps us very well prepared. We're looking through those numbers, and Ben says, well, he is 5-for-6 in bases loaded situations. And Ben had mentioned very astutely too, don't know if there's anybody else you'd rather have up in the batter's box than 44 in this moment. And this is why. And he delivered. And I felt a calmness when Gabe Swanson came to the plate. And, you know, that's a calmness of a guy that is hitting, you know, just north of 250. So it's not like Gabe Swanson is having the Joshua Overbeek month, or, you know, even what Case Sanderson's done as of late. But what Gabe Swanson has done is, if you think about the most production this season, have come up in some of the biggest games, the Vanderbilt game. Ironically, the day that we were also paying tribute to Greg, that was the day that, you know, everyone had found out that Greg had passed away. Gabe Swanson delivers in that moment. Then fast forward to the Northwestern game, and a game that Nebraska had to have to force a rubber match in the second part of that doubleheader on that Saturday, and Gabe Swanson hits a grand slam. Then you go back to last week, and this is a very key moment of this season, I think. really more than anything. Maryland, Nebraska, rubber match game. Andrew Johnson, the starting pitcher for Maryland, cannot find the strike zone at all. I mean, he is struggling mightily. All of a sudden, he walks and loads the bases. Gabe Swanson comes to bat. All of a sudden, Andrew Johnson decides to find the strike zone, and it's 0-2 on Gabe Swanson. You're thinking, man, if he gets Swanee to either go down looking or he fans him, all of a sudden, you're one pitch away from getting out of what was a disastrous start on a game where every little opportunity you have to take advantage of. It's 0-2 on Gabe Swanson, and he goes yard to right center, hits his second grand slam in as many weeks. And all of a sudden, that opens the floodgates on what was a huge series victory for Nebraska. Mm-hmm. So then, I get it, it's a non-conference game, so it doesn't really mean much in the Big Ten standings, but from an RPI standpoint, but more than anything, just to feel good about how you're going into the weekend against Minnesota. And that moment where the ninth inning, again, that feeling of just dejection of how you gave up that insurance run to K-State and a game where you really felt like you're playing good baseball up until that moment. He comes in and just delivers like he has been. I mean, it is pretty amazing with a lot of guys that are more consistent, like Caden Brumbaugh, who's consistently hitting the ball better. I think Ben's right. There is not another person on that team in that dugout that you would have rather seen striding to the batter's box than Gabe Swanson, and we know what happened.
Tell me this, because I had this thought the other night. Because of that run in the ninth inning, because it was a two-run game and two outs, by the way, I think like we gloss over that aspect, is that a strikeout ends it, a ground ball on the infield ends it, like all of these things, a long fly ball ends it. Like the game could be over if you put that ball in about 80% of the opportunities for where that ball can get hit. But because of that insurance run, and it is 6-4, do you think in a similar situation, let's say we're in regionals, mm-hmm. and we know what Gabe Swanson looked like in May last year,
yeah.
You know?
And what day is it today?
Yeah, exactly. It's gonna be May. So you get into regionals or you get into the Big Ten tournament. Mm-hmm. And you have same situation, 6-4, two outs, bases loaded, Gabe Swanson at the plate. Right now, and it's famously, we'll see where it goes the rest of the month, but right now, 6-7 with bases loaded.
Yeah.
Having that insurance run, do you consider walking him? Like our opponent's going to, because you look at him and you go, guys, he's 6-7. In bases loaded opportunities, nobody else on the roster is going to be close to that.
Mm-hmm.
So is it, if you're playing the numbers, do you like your chances against just about anyone else in the lineup needing one out and still having a lead?
If you're in a situation, I would say this, if you have an open bag, then you're probably
but would you walk in a run to say you're still up 6-5 and you're not giving Gabe Swanson the chance to end the game?
No, I'm not going to, despite the numbers, because then all of a sudden that tying run's 90 feet away and now all it takes is just not even four pitches out of the zone, but just one pitch that your catcher can't handle, and you're putting your team into that type of position if you do opt to do that. I get the point, though. I 100% understand the question there, because there is a clutch gene that you just hope at least one of your players, and this is any college baseball team, that you hope they possess that. And you mentioned the tear he was on last year, at the end of last year, going from the Big Ten tournament into the regional, where it was almost comical when he would come up anymore. You're like, I already know what's going to happen. You know, so I think when you're feeling yourself like that, absolutely. But yeah, it would be one of the craziest things to do something like that. But to even have the conversation, to entertain the conversation, it speaks volumes of what someone is doing in that situation in a key moment. Would you rather have your pitcher deal with basically a different hitter, knowing that, okay, we have now just trimmed the margin for error that much more, but the alternative is, if we decide to pitch to this guy, what he not only has an opportunity to do, but what he's shown he can do far more times than not. So it is an interesting dynamic. I would still say no, I wouldn't want to do that, because then all of a sudden you're putting a hell of a lot more pressure onto your pitching staff. Not only again throw strikes, but my God, do not let one get behind your catcher, because then all of a sudden we have a tie game.
I'm just saying, if there's that exact same situation, and what was it? Gabe was 0 for 2 so far in the game. It's not like he'd lit it up. But if the guy behind Swanson is like 0 for 3, 0 for 4 on the day, and you're
it's a discussion.
Like I'm at the very least, I've got a timeout and a mound visit, and we're saying, hey, we might want to do this. It doesn't look great if it doesn't go well, but man, that dude hits really well end of April and into May and all season in bases loaded opportunities.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny. I feel like you probably have that audible question to the rest of your coaches, you have two coaches that are out on third and first base, but to your pitching coach, like I'm imagining the scenario of if Will Bolton and Rob Childress are in the dugout, where Will just says, geez, do we walk him? And then you almost kind of answer your own question. No, we can't right. can't do that. We can't do that. We cannot put the tie and run 90 feet away on purpose, you know, but if it constitutes a conversation, I think that tells you all you need right there.
Yes.
The type of presence that someone is having. If you're even going to have a conversation to where someone is going to talk you off of it and say, no, we can't do that. But the fact that people who are extremely intelligent minds in this sport that are leading these programs could have that question, which I think they could, you kind of maybe look at it. Maybe it's even something you ask audible. You just give the other coach a look of, and the guy goes, no, we can't do it.
Here's this part of it. Because even if there's a 99% chance you're not going to do it, if for that 1% is in a pitcher's head at some point out there that says, oh, this situation here, okay, we've done all the scouting, we know he's at this point 9 for 10 with bases loaded, or whatever the number is when you get into the regional and you get up to Omaha, if for that 1% chance that the pitcher has in his head, hey, should we walk? Should we, like, that he's not locked in on the, I have to get this out. That's a giant advantage for Nebraska because of the how mental the game of baseball is. How much over a 3-hour game, how much of it is in your head?
Right.
Like if you went through with a stopwatch and said, this is how much action there is over the course of these 3 hours, the majority of it is going to be you in your head, not a ball in play or a ball being thrown.
Yeah, and it's interesting because of the fact that there's going to be that, being a high-level competitor yourself, there's going to be that ego where it's essentially you've got the, I would say, ego alter ego of there's that smart competitor in you that says, maybe this is something I should consider. And then there's the Uber competitor, the alter ego. It's like, I'm gonna throw a little wrench into that trend there. This guy hadn't seen my stuff yet, you know. So there is a little bit of that balance, and then you've got the other conversation going on in the dugout of, is this smart or not? Because, like you said, if it pays off, great. People say, man, that was a risky move, but it paid off. If it doesn't, then you're the GOAT. Then it's not the greatest of all time GOAT. You're the GOAT. You're the, why the hell would you put the tie and run 90 feet away? Oh my gosh. You put that much more pressure, not only on your pitcher, but on your catcher. Oh my gosh. Everyone's, what's are so tight now. And so it does have, I think, a cumulative effect one way or the other, but it's an interesting question. And here's something else that I think I mentioned Gabe Swanson, where he's hitting right now. So he is currently at 245. The most productive hitter when it comes to driving in runs right now is Dylan Carey. He's got 33 leading Nebraska right now. He's got also, Dylan Carey that is, also has 47 hits in 160 at-bats. Gabe Swanson is just one RBI shy of Dylan Carey now. He's got 32 runs driven in. But Dylan Carey, as I mentioned, he has got 47 hits.
Yeah.
Gabe Swanson has 24 hits. Dylan Carey has 160 at bats. Gabe Swanson has 98 at bats. So when he is driving in runs, he is doing it in bunches, and you can pinpoint the games that he's had these monster games. So he had his career record 7 against Maryland.
Yes.
But you look at what he did against Kansas State with just one swing of the bat. He had
10 in the last two games.
Right. And then he had the 6 against Vanderbilt as well. So, are they coming in bunches, but they're coming up in huge games where Nebraska needs them.
So that is one big part, because I know we had talked about before, this would have been a couple of weeks ago, where we were talking about the opportune hitting, the runners in scoring position. And I think at that time, while we were talking about that, it wasn't Gabe Swanson getting that. I know it was a decent percentage with runners in scoring position, but it seems like when it's Gabe Swanson or Babe Swanson, as a lot of the fun social media commentary has begun to call him because of this last week.
The great Gambino.
Yes. Yeah. The great Swanbino. So you look at what he's doing. It seems like you're right. It's the moments that he does it that it feels bigger. No matter where the runners in scoring position hits are coming from, the production is coming from, it seems like when it's been Gabe Swanson this year, it's been bigger than anyone else is because of those games. But especially now that you are getting into May. And I think that that's good for us there as we look at 3 weekends left. You still also have a Creighton game in there for RPI. First rule of business, and I feel like this is a conversation I literally had 3 months ago talking about men's basketball. First order of business is getting yourself to Omaha. Right. So winning the games you need to win to get yourself to Omaha. Baseball being a little bit different in that there are these late season non-conference games you don't see in basketball. Mm-hmm. Because they don't give us the bracket busters games like I used to love.
Those too. Gosh dang it. Watching an 11 o'clock game, 11 o'clock at night against 2 mid-majors, some of the best stuff right there.
Yeah, give me a Wichita State and Loyola, 11 p.m. on a Tuesday. Just exactly. Beautiful. So baseball, you've got the non-conference. So the Creighton game, that could be helpful for RPI. But first order of business is what are you doing with these 9 games left on the weekends to get yourself to Omaha? You just have, it's not top 8 anymore. It's top 12. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're going to have to remind everyone every single time we talk about this because it is a format change. In the same way that basketball was a format change to 15 teams instead of all 18 making the Big Ten tournament. So right now, Nebraska is sitting in a tie for 10th with Michigan State, Northwestern, and Rutgers, all at 9-12. And I believe with the tiebreakers, Nebraska would be in out of that foursome.
Yep.
But there's teams that are just ahead of them that have the same number of losses. Indiana and Penn State are both 12-12. Mm-hmm. So there's room, like you can gain on a couple of these programs immediately if you go take care of business. And then just behind that foursome, Minnesota and Purdue, both at 7-14. Huh, those names sound familiar. Oh, because Nebraska has those two coming up 2 of the next 3 weekends. Michigan's the other one as well in there, and Michigan at 11-10, so just ahead of where Nebraska would be. This is I'll see how you feel about this, but me personally, this is as favorable a last month of baseball as anyone in the Big Ten is going to get when you're looking at just getting into the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, and this is where I also look at the only team in what you just laid out there in the Big Ten standings, the only team that essentially is eliminated, even though if it's not mathematically yet, is Ohio State. Ohio State is just a dumpster fire this year for whatever reason, which I'll admit I'm very surprised because Ohio State has at least been able to attract a lot of good arms there too. So to see them as bad as they are is a bit surprising, but
Colorado Rockies of the Big Ten.
They pretty much are. You know. the sense of urgency though, that all these teams will have against Nebraska, even Michigan, that seems like they're in a pretty good spot in the Big Ten right now. But if they had all of a sudden this type of slide, then they could be a little bit nervous on that final weekend too. there's going to be a sense of urgency that Nebraska is up against, but they have to match. And I thought they did that last weekend. We were talking about that in the Maryland game, because Maryland was also in a similar situation where they need wins. They need to bolster that win-loss record in the conference if they want to be in Omaha for the Big Ten tournament. So all of these teams that you're playing from here on out, even Michigan, is trying to play their way into Omaha. And in Michigan's case, trying to avoid any major setback to where they play their way out of Omaha right now. And the other thing about the Michigan one, and I know we got Minnesota this weekend, but this is where you and I can look ahead. Hopefully the team is not, that Michigan also provides a good RPI opportunity. So you have Creighton, that's a good RPI opportunity still next Tuesday. And then you have Michigan in three games that provides a great opportunity. And oh, by the way, that just happens to be at home. So there are some amazing opportunities for this baseball program where all of a sudden it does seem like they're playing as if they understand that too, that they're trying to take advantage of that opportunity. And I don't want to hear, I know everyone says, well, Minnesota has really struggled this year, so Nebraska needs to sweep them. You don't need to sweep anybody to get in Omaha right now. You just don't. If you do, you're going to take it.
Win the series.
Yes, win series. That's all you need to do right now. You win series, you are not only in, but you're going to really like your seed in the Big Ten tournament. With the 9 games remaining right now, in conference play, I would say Nebraska needs to find a way to win 5. They win 5 of those, I feel like they are squarely in. Seeding might be a little bit on the low side, and it probably still will be regardless. But if you can get 5 wins, I think you're going to like where you're at. Now, for Nebraska, you need to be greedy here. The Purdue series out in West Lafayette, Purdue's been kind of a weird team. They put up some weird numbers at times. They put up a 14 spot in one inning. Last weekend, Minnesota, they've had the ability to beat some teams here and there. Hell, they beat Oregon State earlier in the season as well. So there's definitely some potential there. They've got a couple of guys, names to know this weekend too, in Drew Birkeland. He's got 11 homers on the year, and he's driven in quite a few runs. And also a guy that's kind of hitting lower into their lineup right now, but Weber Neal's also with 11 home runs. So they've got a little bit of pop. Their pitching is very similar to what we saw with Northwestern and Maryland, where the strikeout to walk ratio isn't great as a club. And if you can get to their bullpen, it's game on, just like Maryland, just like Northwestern. So that attack that Nebraska's had in the batter's box is going to be paramount. It's going to be that way from here on out. If Nebraska continues to do those things that we've now seen in back-to-back conference weekends, I like not only this team being in Omaha, but at least, here's the other thing, this is why Friday is important, they have not been a 500 baseball team since the Louisiana Lafayette Friday night game. Oh, when they won that game, they were a 500 team. Then they lost that doubleheader the next day, and since then, they have been below 500. They are now one game below 500. And why is that important, Caleb? Well, we know. You got to be above 500 if you are to be even considered for an at-large in the NCAA tournament.
Now, here's just a couple of notes. Michigan, at 11-10 in the league, they close, obviously one of them being Nebraska, but also Indiana, who's currently 12-12, mm-hmm. and Ohio State. So if you're looking at Michigan's last few series, they're going to get up for the Nebraska one, because you're holding off teams that are fighting their way to make it into the Big Ten tournament. Another thing that you noted was you said five wins and you're good. Well, the thing about that, Nick, is if you sweep a series, you can still lose your other two as long as you get a win. You could lose 2 of your last 3 series and still get into the Big Ten tournament. I don't like that for momentum, but you're still in. You're still there. Everything resets and you start playing games in Omaha. You're guaranteed 3 games in Omaha. That's the format part that we haven't talked about, is that you are set up into groups and you play the 3 games in your group, and the winner of each group advances into the semifinal round. And then from there, it is a single elimination tournament, semifinal and final, played out over the weekend. So you're guaranteed 3 games. And if you're Nebraska, let's say it's not 5. Let's say you get to 6 or 7 out of these last 3 weekends. One, you're feeling a lot better about you're definitely in the Big Ten tournament, and you're liking your seed a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But you know you have 3 more games to help yourself with a little bit of the RPI, trying to get yourself that at-large bid. getting those three games, being in a good position, and then getting those three games can be extremely beneficial for the Huskers looking at a postseason.
Absolutely. And the other part about Nebraska, if they are to do what it takes to get into the Big Ten tournament, this is a team that they're going to use that month of April and hopefully now May and say, hey, you know what? When we played UCLA, in case they're in UCLA's pod, mm-hmm. or remember when we played Iowa, in case they're in Iowa's pod, or USC, in case they're in USC's pod. Well, we should have beaten, we could have won the series against Iowa, could have won the series against USC, and two of the three games against UCLA, Nebraska had leads in late. So, and that was when that team, especially that UCLA and USC series, that was when this team collectively was hitting a very, very weak, like 235, 240.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a struggle offensively. And so I think they're going to feel like they're a different team. And as you know, Caleb, it's a one gamer. It's not a three game series. So anything can happen in nine innings of baseball, especially when you've got not only that confidence of the last time you played in a tournament there, you won a title, but you're going to have the home crowd support as well. That I don't think there's a lot of those teams like the UCLA's, even the Oregon's who haven't played Nebraska, and in the Iowa's and the USC's that would necessarily want Nebraska in their pod. So you got to work with that little characteristic as well if Nebraska gets in there. So I just think there's a lot of different things that can work in Nebraska's favor. And then, yeah, okay, if we want to look at big picture for a moment with the Big Ten tournament format as well, if you get an Iowa or UCLA or USC in your pod and you have a chance to play them and you play one of those teams, again, now we're talking about another RPI opportunity too. I mean, that's the one thing. Yeah. If Nebraska's able to work ahead and be an above 500 team, it's great to get wins. Obviously, you want to play as long as you can, but why not knock down an RPI opportunity here and there in the process? And again, the conversation is still not a bad one when it comes to Nebraska potentially getting an at-large. They've got work to do, a lot of work to do, more than anybody that we're going to have this conversation about, legitimately conversation about. But there is a path, and that's the bottom line, because if you would have – if we, you and I would have been having this conversation after California, I would have been laughing at you. I'm like, come on, man, let's just get them to Omaha and hope for the long run through the Big Ten tournament. But now they've at least had so much more of a successful midweek than they did a year ago that they've put themselves in that conversation, despite having a below 500 record right now.
It's going to be amazing one of these seasons when the midweek and the weekends all right? come together at the same time. If the season ended today, and we'll just say Nebraska gets that 10 seed out of the tiebreakers, whatever, tied there, Nebraska would be in Pool C, which is the 3, 6, and 10 seed. That would be Nebraska with Oregon and Illinois. If the season ended today, you're looking at RPI opportunities. And by the way, I said they get three games. They get two games.
Right, three team pods.
If you look at that, there's your RPI opportunity getting in. But hopefully, the way the season closes out here, if you are able to get 6+ wins out of these next three weekends, you're higher than a 10 seed anyway. So you'd have to manage how those all fall out. By the way, the pools, Pool A is the 1, the 8, and the 12. Pool B, 2, 7, 11. C is the 3, 6, and 10. And D is the 4, the 5, and the 9. All of that up in Omaha, May 20th through 23rd for pool play. Semifinals are on the 24th, championship game the 25th. We are into May, so all of that happening right now.
And Caleb, real quick, because I see Husker Chuck in the chat asked the question. It's a good question too. What the tiebreakers are if pool play results in three teams are at 1-1. That's a great question. First, obviously, head to head is going to be eliminated because if there's a tie there, then obviously everybody's gotten each other. I believe, now don't quote me, and I'll have to check this. I believe the next tiebreaker is runs allowed, I think. But I will check into that. And then after there's still a tie there, then I think you go into runs scored. And then you kind of work your way down to some of the really fun, maybe a potato sack race to determine a winner, okay. maybe a coin flip.
If they didn't change them from last year, here's what it is. Obviously, if there's two teams tied, then it goes to the head-to-head. Right. If there's three or more teams tied, then you go to, oh gosh, and trying to do this all just on the fly here, you've got there the round robin for all of the teams, best winning percentage against Big Ten common opponents, best overall RPI is within there as well. And then there could be a random draw within that as well. So it's very similar to basketballs where you're looking at your round robin, you're looking at how did you do against the other teams in the league. Mm-hmm. So all of those things matter. So just taking care of business these last 3 weeks is going to be big. But I haven't found it on the updated league, the 18 team league, if they've changed any of their tiebreakers from a year ago.
Yeah, and I think obviously what Chuck's asking is about the tournament itself. So if teams are 1-1 in the pool play, I think you do go with what happened. Yeah, what actually happened in the pool play. That's where I think it's runs allowed, then I think it's runs scored, and then again it starts going down to God, I'm trying to even think what the third element is, but yeah, if I remember correctly, it always starts with runs allowed. If that number is the same, then it's runs scored. And then you start getting into some really wild, fun things like, what did your two-hole hitter do in the third inning of the first game? You know, weird things like that. So yeah. We'll try to get some clarity, but I'm pretty sure, Chuck, to answer your question, I think it's runs allowed, and then I think it's runs scored. Obviously, head-to-head, if there's a head-to-head element, you'll go with the head-to-head first. But if you've got everybody beating each other, then that kind of throws and eliminates that one.
Well, yeah, because if you have two teams are 1-1, that means everyone is 1-1.
Right.
You know, so it would be three.
So everybody's beating each other. Yeah, you're not gonna go head to head there.
And then is it run scored? Does the highest seed automatically advance? I don't know. We're gonna have to right. see. That's the thing I hate about conference expansion. This is the one thing I hate about conference expansion. I don't know any of the rules for any of the tournaments and how they're trying to tie break any of these things.
I'll tell you what, when Nebraska locks in a spot, guaranteed spot into the Big Ten tournament, I will go head first into those rules, Husker Chuck, and I will have those to a T all the way down to what I'm sure will be a coin toss.
Yeah. All right. There we go. So that's coming up just in a few weeks. Nebraska, obviously at home, Minnesota this weekend, which by the way, I will plug again. I will be out there for the ballpark bash, the face painting and the balloons and the inflatables. And as long as it's not raining. I've hated this rain the last couple of days.
Actually, Saturday and Sunday are supposed to be the better days. I thought it was going to be the exact opposite. So, we should have a good day for it.
All right, Nick. I had a conversation online, as a matter of fact, yesterday. And here, let me just read this to you, and then I will just get your reaction before I go into what more of the conversation was. Based on the online directory for the Nebraska Athletic Department, there are 417 employees, 36 have athletic director in their title. Breathtaking how many salaries it takes to field a bottom-of-the-barrel Big Ten athletics program.
Bottom-of-the-barrel
Big Ten program. That's talking about the athletic department as a whole.
It's interesting. The context on this, I think, is obviously a bit important, because are we talking about performance on the field? Are we talking about administrative decisions? Are we talking about, you know, being in line for, or at least the ability to grapple with what everything that's going on with revenue share? This is what I would say. I'm surprised to hear that initially. My initial reaction is, wow, that's surprising, because I like to think athletic departments, when they are able to not only successfully pivot with change, with major change, but to the point that they're actually ahead of the curve, when they've anticipated, they've already put things in place to make sure that when everything is coming down and it's the first day that it's in effect, that it is as seamless as possible, because you have done everything you need to do as an entire athletic department to make sure that everyone is transitioned the way it needs to be, so the product on the field doesn't suffer. And I've always been led to believe that's where Nebraska is as an athletic department. So that's why I would say I'm surprised. Now, as far as the day-to-day and how things are getting done, I would say I don't know enough about that to maybe be surprised or to say, yeah, that makes sense, because when you have that big of an athletic department, and what was that number again? You said how many have athletic director in their title?
36.
Wow. That's a big number. And could that mean a lot of cooks in the kitchen when it comes to your day-to-day decision-making? Or is that more normal in college athletics? I guess I would have to maybe look around, especially to your own conference peers in the Big Ten. Is that more normal? I will say this. Yeah, my initial reaction, that surprises me.
So and I think the conversation on where we were, a lot of that comes from results on the field. Mm-hmm. Results on the field. And yes, we've seen what football has looked like for at least the last decade, especially since joining the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Men's basketball making one NCAA tournament in the last decade. Obviously won the crown, but when you look at those two, like those are the two big ones across the league. Now, yes, volleyball here, maybe hockey somewhere else, but those are the two big ones. So those aren't going well for Nebraska. And if you're, I just want to make sure I don't misrepresent what was said. So it was, when you suck at the top two items in your job description, you probably aren't very good at your job. Now, my pushback was, if we're talking about results on the field, Nebraska's athletic department finished 22nd in the nation last year in the Director's Cup standings, third in the Big Ten, through the winter sports this year, number 24 in the nation, eighth in the Big Ten. Obviously, football and men's basketball not scoring for the Huskers in either one of those. You're getting a lot of wrestling, just finished national runner-up. You had volleyball continuing to make Final Fours. You just go multiple years on things right now. Well, shoot, right now men's tennis is back into the NCAA tournament for just the third time in program history. That's going to be the potential for some points there. Baseball won the conference tournament last year, just a couple of years ago, won the conference during the regular season. Men's track and field has won multiple conference titles over the last few years.
Bowling.
We have to get to bowling in there. So soccer, not this past year.
Yeah, but women's 2 years ago.
They just had a recent Elite Eight run. Look at the athletic department as women's basketball. We can't forget Amy Williams and everything they've done. They've posted back-to-back 20 win seasons. They've made three of the last four NCAA tournaments. There's a lot of very good things happening in this athletic department while also staying in the black.
Yes.
The way the whole thing is being run. Now, there is some aspect of that to where I say, all right, unleash the funnel on spending on some of these things where you can go, okay, you see what other places are spending, go outspend them a little bit because you have that. But I also know fiscally conservative Nebraska, that's not necessarily where you're going to go. Right. But in the long term, it's nice to have a healthy department where they are financially. And part of that being a healthy department financially is that you're also seeing success from your athletic programs. They just had Night at the Lead the other night, and you saw all the student athletes and all of the success that they've had, all of the All-Americans, men's gymnastics, we didn't even mention, consistently getting to the NCAA tournament, finishing in the top four, all of those types of things. Lexi Rodriguez, all of her success with volleyball. Like, these are very real things. But if it comes back to football and men's basketball, then the appearance from the outside is that things aren't going well.
Yeah, that's the window dressing, if you will. When it goes to when you go into a store, and what do they always say right there on the window? You're going to have your most attractive thing that you're trying to sell, and that's obviously football and then basketball. We're talking about the revenue generating sports. The other revenue generating sport is more than doing fine in volleyball. Mm-hmm. So if you look at where basketball has been and football, this is where I think it's really easy to lose sight of. And I'm not trying to be a homer here. I'm not trying to go rah, rah, zis, kumba when it comes to the athletic department. I'm trying to keep this as factually accurate as I can, but also using the eyeball test. There is always going to be when you're spending money and you are the main revenue generator for the athletic department, that there needs to be a high standard when it comes to win losses, when it comes to 9 to 10 wins. As we've talked about ad nauseum, Caleb, you and I, and in previous shows that we've both been a part of, that's always been the conversation, is that win total. And it's dipped. We know that. It's dipped, and this was not even something that Matt Rhule all of a sudden introduced. This was something that he's trying to fix. But improvement's an improvement. Nebraska did improve a year ago. Now, maybe there's certain aspects in one-loss games that are still hanging around, but if we're just cutting through all of that and saying, did they go to a bowl game? Yes, they did. They didn't the year before. Everything else, you can talk yourself in and out of the belief of where this football program is going. But then you also look at basketball. Let's go back to the Griesel and Derek Walker team, where this is my, now this is more my opinion, less facts, but I bear with me here. The Sam Griesel, Derek Walker team is where I really felt a turning point was made for this basketball program. And what I mean by that is the Fred Hoiberg from Iowa State, and the way that he won basketball games there and was successful. Then he goes to the Chicago Bulls, comes back. I think there were two things working against him when he came back. First of all, college basketball was completely different for the short time that he was away than what it currently was when he took the job at Nebraska. So you got to make the adjustment there. And then the second part about it is the conference itself between Big 12 basketball and what's successful in Big 12 compared to the Big 10, where there is maybe a little bit more emphasis of having the traditional big man, as opposed to not necessarily needing that in the Big 12. I get it. High-level basketball is high-level basketball, but you also have to adapt to your conference. And I think there was a lot of things that Fred had back in his time at Iowa State that worked very well for him. And I think he felt that he had pieces of that, or was at least assembling pieces of that when he first got to Nebraska. That didn't end up working. But what he was able to unlock in trying to find the right formula was, let's start with the culture in the locker room. Let's start with just having good dudes in the locker room that – even when we're going through maybe a little bit of a funk, that we're not going to, the locker room is not going to be completely lost, that these guys are still going to compete at a high level and still have that desire and passion to win basketball games and get themselves out of that funk. I think he's been able to start with a solid culture. And I think the reason I bring up Walker and Griesel is those guys were tremendous culture guys. Yeah, they provided good production on the floor, but they were also guys that everyone else was going to lean on. So what I think he established from that standpoint on is a much more trustworthy team. And I know that sounds trustworthy. This is a team that should have made the Big Ten tournament. It was talking about the NCAA tournament. Well, yeah, and that did happen, and you can't ignore that. But as far as my confidence level that they're in a much better place because of the overall cohesiveness that they have and the fact that they actually have a team and there is chemistry there, even when they bring in new bodies, I feel a lot more confident about that. And by that, I feel a lot more confident that last year is going to be more the anomaly when it comes to a team that is solid guys. They can all play their role, but they all like each other. They all have that desire to win. And as soon as things start getting a little choppy in the water, they don't go running. This is a team that wants to embrace that. It's a culture, I should say, that wants to embrace that. So I feel like basketball is on the upswing once Fred was able to find that. So I look at football and basketball on the move. Are they where they need to be right now? No. But do I feel like they are they're ascending as opposed to descending? I do believe that. I believe they are starting to ascend.
Well, it's well documented year three of Matt Rhule. So we'll see if that holds true in year three in Lincoln. And you're right about basketball. You go back to the Derek Walker's final year, and that's the year that things to me changed for Nebraska men's basketball, because that's when you got the thing that worked for Hoiberg's offense, and it is a high IQ passing big at the top of the key. Yep. Derek Walker lived with that. And then he could also take guys off the dribble and make stupid ankles on some shots down the lane. That was helpful as well. But then you went the next year, and it was Rink Mass doing it. Mm-hmm. And it worked really, really well. You have an NCAA tournament team.
And you didn't get him back.
That. Yeah. You didn't have that this year, this past season. So you had to go to a lot of Bryce Williams, what do you have? Juwan Gary, what do you have? And it was just the team would have been, if you had a healthy Rink Mass this last season, I think they run away on a way to the NCAA tournament. We'll see what that looks like this next season when you get Rink Mass back and how all of that goes. But I think both of those, like you said, on the upswing. If you're judging it entirely by results on the field or court for football and men's basketball. Yeah, cumulatively combined between the two of them, you're bottom half of the Big Ten. If that's the only way you're gauging it, by the wins and losses for those two sports. If you're judging the entirety of the athletic department by how does everyone do, you can even weight it. You can weight football more. You can weight basketball more. I get that. But volleyball is a big deal in this league. And you have the premier volleyball program. Even with Wisconsin doing what they've done for the last several years, even with the history at Penn State, even with bringing in the California schools and bringing in the Pacific Northwest schools, you have the premier volleyball program in the conference. Softball right now, which we haven't even mentioned, by the way, is third in the league heading into their final weekend. They host Maryland this weekend. Nebraska is a top 25 team. They'll get into the Big Ten tournament next week out at Purdue. You have successful programs up and down this athletic department, and you're running in the black. So I think there's a lot to be said there. My argument on where this is, and some of this might come from the fact that I did track and field in college. And so when I see the constant conversations of maybe some of them being more tongue-in-cheek, where it's just make men's basketball a club team and give all of the money to football, or got all of the men's programs at Nebraska suck. Okay, well, when you say that, and you're talking about football and men's basketball, and maybe baseball being down a little bit right now, or when baseball loses the first game of the Big Ten tournament last year,
right?
You're ignoring gymnastics, wrestling, track and field, tennis this season, cross country. Like you're ignoring all of these things that have not just modicums of success, but have Big Ten championship, Big Ten runner-up, national runner-up expectations with what they do with their programs year in and year out. You're ignoring those. So no, the men's programs, the top two have not been great. As a whole, the department is extremely healthy. And where I would put it, I would argue that Nebraska is not just a top half of the Big Ten. So that would be top nine. I would argue Nebraska is a top five athletic department in the league. And obviously a big part of that is how is your football program doing? So that brings Nebraska down a little bit. But who are the athletic departments as a whole that you would compare to Nebraska? Ohio State, obviously, with what they have for their football program, but also they have a lot of other very good programs. Oregon as a whole for their athletic department. Think track and field especially, helping with a lot of stuff, and they're going through a volleyball change. But then you go, okay, Penn State's volleyball just did really well, and they've got football year in and year out, and basketball is super hit and miss on whether or not it's good. But, okay, Michigan, you throw them in there. You start to go down the list, and you can find a lot of team or a lot of athletic departments that have – they're not putting together their top two year in and year out.
Right.
And so if that's the – sometimes I think we're too close to it as either Nebraska media or Nebraska fans, and that we see the blemishes with the Huskers, especially football and men's basketball. But if we step back, there are a lot of blemishes all over the dang place, and Nebraska athletics as a whole – is very, very healthy, and I would argue a top five athletic department, top to bottom in the league.
And I would add to that, Caleb, because I think those are all great points. I would add to that, just start looking around. In a lot of those sports that maybe we don't discuss enough, look at some of those coaches too. One of my favorite coaches in the entire athletic department is a highly successful one too, and a guy that I want to go through a wall just on my day-to-day after I listen to him, and Mark Manning.
Yes.
You know, you've got this sustained success in a program, especially in a conference, that it is brutal to try to get above the Penn States and Iowas in wrestling. And Nebraska shows out on the national level this year. So there's still plenty of gas in that tank. I look at, you brought up Amy Williams. I think the consistency there I think you've continued to see her evolve when it comes to recruiting it, and in the transfer portal era of making that basketball program better and trying to climb up a notch each year, but at the very least ending their season in the NCAA tournament. I look at a lot of the coaches. I can't go through every one of them right now because we don't have time for that, but that's the other part of it is – if you're around these coaches and you get a chance to sit down and talk to them about their vision, these are all people that have a pretty solid plan. It's just being able to roll with the punches that comes with the uncertainty of 18 to 22 year olds' decisions when it comes to recruiting. And when it comes to, do I decide to stick around or do I want to go in the transfer portal? That's what they're dealing with. But I like the collective group of coaches that this athletic department has. I like the no BS approach by Troy Dannon. Listening to him last night on the Athletic Director Hour. That's a guy that he's not coming in with scripted questions. It's not like, hey, can you ask me about this or that? He's a guy that's like, all right, whatever you got for me, let's let it rip. Hey, whatever fans, whatever you got for me, let it rip. And he actually does say something. So I feel like that's another element to this. And I'll speak on baseball as well, because I feel like I get into this conversation, this debate, or however you want to call it, every year when Nebraska's not playing well, is I understand compared to football, Nebraska's pinnacle for the baseball program happened more recent than football, and that is getting to the College World Series as opposed to playing in a national championship. 05 was their most recent College World Series. But if you look at this program, going all the way back to when Darren Erstad took over and then to Will Bolt, this team is in the NCAA tournament more times than they're not. This team is above 500 more times than they're not. 2022 was not a good year for Nebraska. They were still above 500. They schedule tough because they understand the Big Ten is not always going to provide them that RPI spark. And sometimes when you schedule that tough, it can come back and bite you. Sometimes you suffer with some injuries. But this idea that Nebraska needs to be in the regional host conversation every year, to me, that is just – that is missing the reality of Nebraska baseball in 2025 as opposed to 2005. You're not in the Big 12 anymore. You're in the Big 10. Big 12 cares a lot about baseball, and they still do. Big 10, not as much. You hope that that starts to improve now with the addition of the West Coast teams, but that's still a work in progress. So what do you do when it comes to that stud in-state recruit that you had no problem getting to Haymarket Park, playing in the Big 12, playing in places like Texas and College Station? That wasn't a tough sell. Now it's like, hey, do you want to go to Ann Arbor in April? Do you want to go to East Lansing? Do you want to go out to Piscataway and play a rockin' series? Do you want to go out to College Park, Maryland? And we may or may not be able to get a team from this conference into even a super regional. Okay, so there are challenges there, but that's why you got the coaching staff that you have to be creative with how you still sell those guys on this. And you're also dealing now with the ACC, the SEC, NIL part of it, where it's tough to compete with those teams, but yet you still do get the majority of those in-state players to your baseball program. There are new challenges for this program, and despite all of it, they might have one rocky year, but for the most part, they're in the NCAA tournament, they're in that conversation, and they're putting themselves right there in the mix of the Big Ten. I get it. This year is a little bit, let's just face it, it's not what we expected it to be, but there's still some time for them to get going. But even if they don't make the NCAA tournament, say that they go, you know, 2-Q in the Big Ten tournament, this is still a team that a year ago won a Big Ten tournament title. So that recency bias that we have sometimes and thinking about, well, they were in the College World Series in 05, so they need to be back at that level. That's just not the consistent reality with this baseball program or any team in the Big Ten right now.
There are a couple of steps that any team in the Big Ten is going to have to hit before College World Series is a consistent thing. And I think when you're looking at, you want to be in the regionals, obviously, as best you can every year. But if you can get three out of every 4 years, that's like being out of the Big Ten conference. And if you have a bad non-con, that's probably where you're at. And if you can be in the hosting conversation, one out of every 5, one out of every 6 years, I think that's a realistic expectation, yes. I believe.
Agreed. I absolutely agree with that.
So that's where you are. I think baseball's got an exciting close coming up here in the month of May. Softball, like we said, wraps up their regular season into the Big Ten tournament next week. I think that's all the notes we've got on that. Thank you for entertaining my conversation on where Nebraska Athletic Department is based off of a conversation yesterday. Nick, you will be out there at Haymarket Park with is it you and Ben all weekend?
It is me and Ben this weekend, and then David and myself in Michigan next, or not in Michigan, but for Michigan next weekend.
For Michigan, yeah. Yeah, the next two weekends at home and then closing out with a road series for the Big Ten slate, regular season slate. So follow along with Huskers Radio Network for all of that. And of course, I always love listening to you when you're up on Sports Nightly as well. I listen to that on KLIN here. I know a lot of folks listening in Omaha on 590 up there and all of the good athletic or Huskers Radio Network affiliate. So I'm Caleb Henry. That's Nick Hanley. I'm looking forward to a fun weekend of baseball and softball at home. I will be at the ballpark bash. Come out there, say hello. I'm not endorsed by this. I'm not making any money by it. Like, athletic department's gonna be like, wow, Caleb's going.
You have your own booth,
dude. I would love it. Put me in a dunk tank. I'm all in on this. I love it. You'd get me and my 4-year-old daughter and some face paint. We will be there. You get a prize wheel. I will stand in line for 30 minutes, baby. I am all in.
You know, I think they already did the beer bats, but if I can get my hand on a beer bat, I'll make sure I send it your way too.
I will walk around outside the ballpark with that, and I'll be like, Hanley said I could. Awesome. Hey, you have a good call. I'll see you out at the ballpark this week.
All right, sounds good. Be well.